What does HALO mean for opinions of counsel and opinion of counsel practice? And yes, I am going to answer the question posed by one in-house counsel. Does HALO mean we are back to increasing legal budgets for countless opinions of counsel whenever we get actual notice of a third-party patent? I'm hoping I will answer that. First, we're going to talk a little bit about the history of opinions of counsel and patent litigation. Then I'll talk a little bit about the HALO case itself. And hopefully I'll spend most of my time on the impact of HALO on opinions of counsel and opinion of counsel practice. You have a paper in your materials, and it has quite a bit of detail on the history of opinions in the HALO case. So I'm going to try and breeze through that, and we'll try and spend as much time as we can on the impact of HALO on opinions of counsel. All right. Oh, before we begin, I have to give a disclaimer. The observations made during this presentation are made solely for the purpose of this institute. They are not the views of King & Spalding or any of its clients. Or as David O'Brien mentioned to me yesterday, please don't rely on my opinions about relying on opinions. All right. First, let's talk about the history of opinions of counsel. I've divided it generally into three areas. The 83 to 2003 time period where opinions were basically necessary. 2004 to 14, where the opinions became optional, and then the 2014 forward opinion where the Supreme Court suggests maybe this optional thing isn't going to be the way to go. So let's jump in. The 1983 time period to 2003 time period started with the almost right after the Federal Circuit was created in the Underwater Devices case. Everybody's probably aware of that case. It created an affirmative duty to exercise due care, and that included the obligation to seek and obtain competent legal advice when you had actual notice of another's patent rights.